The views and comments expressed on the Space Show by its guests, callers, and listeners belong to them. The Space Show and its hosts serve only as a platform and are not responsible for others' comments or views. All topics discussed on the Space Show are primarily for educational purposes.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard.
Start. 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the Space Show with Dr. David Livingston. Broadcasting to 7 continents, consistently bringing you quality news and interviews with the best and brightest minds in the new space economy. Here is the founder and host of the Space Show, the man who best articulates the vision of space commercial enterprise, Dr. David Livingston.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to our Monday Space Show program. I am your host, David Livingston. Thank you for tuning in. Just a quick reminder, I will be at the New Space Conference, so there will not be a space show tomorrow, and there will be no Hotel Mars program this week. We will be live back on Friday morning and resuming our normal schedule. Just wanted to remind everybody of that. For those of you who wanted to call and talk to our guest today, who I'll introduce in a minute, Barry Levin, it is 1-866-687-7223. Remember, there are no call screeners, so be patient and we'll bring you up on air as quickly as we possibly can. You can email us at drspace, D-R-S-P-A-C-E, at thespaceshow.com. And you can also use our blog to send us a message or a comment, and that is thespaceshow.com, all the way over to the far right to upcoming shows, and we're the first show listed in upcoming shows. You open up that archive page and scroll all the way to the bottom, and you will be able to send us comments. Also note that Barry has put some important material up on the blog for this show. So as you're listening to us, if you haven't checked out the comments section yet, please go down to the comments, and you want to grasp the material that Barry put up there earlier today. And our website is thespaceshow.com. So remember, our detailed website newsletter, which is center right on the homepage, is updated Sunday after the Sunday Space Show program. So that newsletter is reflective of everything going on this week. And if you scroll down, it also shows all of the programs we have booked for future space show programs. And we've got a couple already booked into October. So make sure you check out our upcoming schedule for the space show programs as well. Everything we do is archived, so you can listen right off of our website very quickly, or you can also download these programs if you want. We have a store in the upper left menu, so for those of you interested in Space Show t-shirts, hats, coffee mugs, things of that nature, look under the support menu and you will find our Space Show store. There's also a listen live button. This tells you how to listen to live Space Show programs and also archive programs. So do, we're going to have fun with phone lines today. Do use this to share the information with friends who often may say, well, Space Show, how do I listen to a program? Or how do I listen to a live show? Feel free to share this information with them, or of course you can always direct them to me for more information. There is a support button center right on our homepage, and this is how you support the Space Show. Remember, we are a 501c3 nonprofit with OneGiantLeapFoundation.org. And as a nonprofit, if you are paying U.S. federal taxes, you get a tax deduction for your gift. The same is true for those of you paying California taxes. We're able to do these programs and distribute the content freely, and we've been able to do this for 16-plus years because many of you do support us, and we thank you very much for that support. Without your support, the Space Show would be like a rocket blowing up on the launch pad, and that would be the end of it. So we really do appreciate your support and hope it will continue. All I can say is thank you very much for your support. And those of you who do not support us but like the Space Show, you ought to thank all the people who support us, too, because they're making it possible for you as well. Don't forget that we are copyrighted and trademarked But you are entitled, and we do give permission for everyone to move our shows around on email, download them, and all of that. There's just a couple of rules in doing that. And so number one is don't do anything commercial with the program. Number two, don't edit them. Don't put any edits or clips up on YouTube or any other website, including your own. And written transcripts are not permitted, even if they're for your own personal use. Please read our full copyright statement at the bottom of each website page, thespaceshow.com, as well as each page for our parent nonprofit, OneGiantLeap Foundation.org. If you have any questions, don't hesitate to get a hold of me, please. And then we do have corporate sponsors along with the individuals who support us through PayPal and their personal checks. We are deeply appreciative of our corporate sponsors because without them, we wouldn't be doing this program either. Their banner ads go across our homepage. Check out what's underneath those banner ads from time to time. The content does change. And we have a couple of those sponsors supporting us for the first segment and the second segment of the show. So for today, the first segment is going to be supported by Orbital ATK. I'm going to flip the order here. Orbital ATK is a global leader in aerospace and defense technology, and they are known as a partner you can count on for advanced, reliable space propulsion systems for space exploration, commercial ventures, and defense programs. And AIAA is also one of our great sponsors, the American Institute of Aeronautics and Astronautics. This is the world's largest aerospace pro society. It has over 30,000 individual members. 88 countries are represented, and there are about 95 corporate members. They are all busy shaping the future of aerospace every day, advancing the state of aerospace science and technology, increasing our knowledge of the universe, and bringing the world closer together. So join us and check them out at their website, AIAA.org. Again, if you're planning to attend AIAA Space 2017 in Orlando, Florida in September, do let me know. I'm planning to be there, and I look forward to saying hello to all the Space Show listeners and supporters that happen to be there for that great event. So again, let me know if you're going to be at AIAA Space 2017. It's early September in Orlando, Florida. And that brings me to our program today. I'm very happy to bring back Barry Levin, who has, since the first of the year, been talking with us on some very interesting shows about the fourth industrial revolution that's going on with manufacturing, artificial intelligence, and other things, and how it's impacting the space community, and how all of this can also impact an overall economy, jobs market, and our future, because many of us may find that we're on the short end of the stick as artificial intelligence and new manufacturing techniques come into play, and we may see some of our jobs going down the tube. So Barry is back with us today, and it's great to have him on board. Barry, welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm good, David. Thank you for having me on the show, and how are you doing?
Pretty good. We're getting some scuffling noises with your cell phone, so we'll give it a try, and we may go back to the other line in a few minutes if it keeps continuing. So fortunately, it goes away real quickly, but we are hearing it. You know, since we've been doing these programs, my awareness level of AI and fourth industrial, you know, manufacturing and machine techniques and stuff, it's a lot more in the apparent press. I mean, that always happens. Once you become aware of something, you see it everywhere, right? So I do see it everywhere. And what I see, Barry, that is common, and not just to the space industry, but all industries, is most haven't got a clue how to deal with it. The government programs for creating jobs, you hear the Democrats and Republicans say, we got to create more jobs, we're going to do this, we're going to create industrial growth, 5% growth, 3% growth, you know, whatever they're talking about. They're clueless. I mean, you know, they could be facing massive unemployment because of technology. If self-driving cars take over and self-driving big rigs, take over, you know, how many truck drivers could end up losing their jobs because of this down the road? So I don't see any political or government solutions even being talked about by our so-called leaders in Congress. And yet every day more and more of this is talked about in the media, if not about space, about technology in general and our economy in general. What have you to say about all of this?
Yeah, well, I have a lot to say about it, and I think you've given a good summary of the situation. The government is out of the loop. And we discussed this before the show, but I think the first thing to say is that what is the current situation, and is it different than previous industrial revolutions? And I think the answer is yes. And I think the reason the answer is yes is because we have exponential change. And everybody uses the phrase exponential change, but that doesn't help the situation, because human beings did not grow up in an exponentially changing environment in terms of our evolutionary history. We're not used to exponential change. We're not used to things being twice as difficult tomorrow as they are today or the day after. And, of course, the poster child for exponential change is Moore's Law, wherein every 18 months the capacity for dollar of computing increases by 100%. It seems like, okay, every 18 months it increases by 100%, but imagine if your salary increased by 100% every 18 months. You'd notice that. The technological changes are not immediately noticeable until some amazing revolutionary development like driverless cars shows up. And, of course, the largest single employer of non-college-educated people in the United States is driving. That means the biggest source of jobs for non-college educated people is about to be wiped out sometime within the next 5 to 10 years, maybe sooner. I think what we're discussing here is the topic of futurism. What is the shape of the future? What are the technologies that are affecting it? And it's important to discuss what futurism is. Futurism is a sort of a philosophical school that attempts to find the trends that are shaping the future. It doesn't predict the future. It, to a certain extent, it tries to create the future. But the future is sort of unpredictable. Getting back to your original question, what about the government? The government is not an exponential institution. I think this is one of the main points of what I want to talk about. In order to deal with exponential changes, we need exponential institutions. We need a Facebook of government, a Twitter of government. We need institutions that can change on a day-to-day basis. Our government is not only not improving, it's getting worse. Our government, I think it's, no matter what your political persuasion is, I think that everyone will agree that our government is less effective in dealing with the problems of today than our government was 50 years ago. So that's the crisis. We have exponential change across a broad variety of industries. We have computing. We have artificial intelligence. We have genomics. We have robotics. We have virtual reality. We have technology. We have even textiles. Of food. We have a revolution in food manufacturing. We have revolutions in every area of technology that you can imagine, and those we can't even imagine. So a short answer to your question is no, the government is not capable of dealing with this. And I hope in this show that we can examine the tools that we have at our disposal to deal with this, because I think your introduction is prescient. The first thing we have to realize is that government is not going to help us.
So is space going to help us?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question, because I had this in some notes I made. The question is, most people who are part of the space community are future-oriented people. They like to think about the possibilities of the future. But I'd like to make a sort of counter-argument. I think that space, the way it's been progressing since we landed the last footsteps on the moon in 1971 or 1972, space is not an exponential technology. What I mean by that is is space getting more and more accessible in an exponential way? And the answer is no, because it costs more or less the same to put a payload into orbit today as it did 30 or 40 years ago. The one exception to that is, of course, Elon Musk. And I'll take Elon Musk's example. Elon Musk said that the cost of launching and producing a space vehicle, a Falcon 9, the cost of materials, which includes the fuel and the aluminum, is less than 1% of the cost of the vehicle. This is a direct quote from Elon Musk. I believe he said it was about 0.5%. So there's an enormous possibility of disruption in the space technology, and Elon Musk is the only one who seems to have realized that. And I'll give an example of that. Elon Musk's Interplanetary Transport System, the ITS, and of course, when Musk said this, everybody rolled their eyes because it seemed so outlandish. He said he hoped to produce a ticket to Mars for $250,000. If you take what it would take to send a crew of four to Mars today, let's make a back, our first show is back of the envelope calculation. Let's do a back of the envelope calculation. Elon Musk's $250,000 ticket versus NASA's ticket. According to NASA, in the latest Mars scenario, the Mars project will cost $200 billion to land four astronauts on the surface of Mars. So that's $50 billion versus $250,000. That's about a factor of 200,000 difference. That's exponential change. And of course, when Musk says he's going to produce a ticket to Mars for $250,000, I don't know anybody that believes that's feasible. But nevertheless, it's a sign that that's the kind of direction he's thinking. That would be exponential change. If we could send a passenger to Mars for $250,000, that would be exponential change. And here's a real question as far as exponential change, the fourth industrial revolution, and space technologies. What is the real question about a Mars project? People who want to go to Mars, or for that matter, people who want to go to the moon, haven't really asked themselves the fundamental question. They ask, what will it cost to go to the moon? But that's not the real question. The real question is, what should it cost to go to the moon? And what I mean by that is, what would be a good deal for the American economy to send astronauts to the surface of the moon or to send astronauts to the surface of Mars? What's a good deal? And the way to evaluate what's a good deal is how much know-how that's applicable to the general economy would be produced by a moon project or a Mars project. And my point of view is that the space program is valuable because it does produce a lot of know-how. Take Orbital ATK or Boeing, any of these companies. These companies are tremendous repositories of technological know-how. It's valuable to the country to have these companies and their technology. They enable us to move into the future. They enable us to remain competitive. But the question is, are we getting value for our dollar? And nobody has made a clear analysis of this. And I think in the future, we and the members of the space community and the space show could do valuable research in ascertaining what is the actual value of dollars spent on the space program and what would be the value of going to Mars for $200 billion. And my point of view is that to achieve exponential growth in space program, we have to go to Mars for $20 billion, an order of magnitude improvement in 10 years. That's exponential growth. I think that if we could go to Mars for $20 billion, I think that it would be easy to convince the American public to, because I think that would be a great deal. We would develop so much manufacturing technology in doing that, that the country would be pushed into a new industrial golden age. But I don't think that if we did it, first of all, it's not even clear that we could do it for $200 billion. But I think the goal should be not just to go to Mars but to go to Mars and revitalize our industrial capacity. And I have a further suggestion. I think that if we spend money in technology development, whether it's in the space program or whether it's in nuclear energy or whether it's in solar energy, all of which I'm an advocate of, I think some percentage of that those dollars, whether it be 1 or 10% of those dollars, should be spent in moving the technology developed into those programs into the general population so people can use these technologies to create new businesses and to create new work. I think that should be built into the economy. So that's part of my proposal. I propose a new partnership between the aerospace industry, the aerospace enthusiast group, and the entrepreneurial groups in the United States, that we should, that companies such as Boeing, ATK, they should transfer some of their technology into the hands of ordinary citizens so that they can create new jobs. This would benefit it. And I actually think that companies like ATK have so much intellectual property that I think in the future that their business will expand to include education, because here's a plan, here's part B. I think not only is the government doing a terrible job, and I think the educational system is doing a terrible job, and I think, I know for a fact that in terms of secondary high school education, 90% of the people teaching high school education science courses have never taken a science course in college. And I think that companies like ATK and Boeing, I think they could revolutionize the education industry by making their technology available on the level of education. And I think they could create a whole new industry for themselves. I have worked with engineers in my business career, and engineers are some of the most patriotic individuals. They share their knowledge whenever they're asked. I mean, I'm not somebody with a professional degree, and although I've worked in engineering, engineers have never been reluctant to share their information with me. I have found engineers to be some of the most wonderful and creative people I've ever met in my life, and I think like companies like ATK and Boeing could take over the education industry and could do a fantastic job, and I think as a small step in that direction, they should consider sharing some of their information, not their intellect, not their proprietary information, information that's necessary for their competitive advantages, but information that their engineers might want to share is how they learn their subject matter. And if these companies could make available their engineering staff, maybe for a small experiment in education, I think everyone would benefit. I think it could open up new economic opportunities for people part of the space community, and I think it could revolutionize the educational industry. So I think even though the future is fraught with difficulties, everybody is aware of the possibility of unemployment, I think there's also great opportunity, and I think that we have the resources, particularly in the aerospace industry, to revolutionize education, revolutionize governance, and revolutionize people's understanding of technology and their access to it. So I think the future is actually... You'd be foolish to deny that we're not in a period of upheaval, but I think the opportunities are enormous, and I think that we should take that attitude. And I think that in the space show in the future, we can do a great deal of experimentation in terms of how to help people gain access to this exponential technology, because as I've outlined in my document, access to this technology is financially very, very accessible. The price of 3D printing is dropping exponentially, and there's a problem. The problem is that it takes a lot of effort to earn this technology, but I think that we could do a lot of experimentation on the space show as to how to make this technology more easily accessible to ordinary individuals so that they could pursue entrepreneurial ventures.
All right, let me bring something in from a listener, and I actually have what the listener is talking about because I am part of the Howard Bloom emailing list. I don't know if you're part of Howard's emailing group.
No, but I know Howard Bloom is.
Okay, so Joe is in Phoenix, Arizona, and he says, Barry, I would like your opinion as to whether you may be putting too much authority or hope or rescue or savior or something on the shoulders of the aerospace industry, I'd like to read you something that was posted this morning by a former astronaut, a retired astronaut, Dr. Phil Chapman, who many on the space show will know because Phil has been a guest on the space show several times in the past. And this has to do with something of a topic different from what you're talking about, but Phil laid out the history of spaceflight, which does not match the history of most space enthusiasts and people that think the space industry or going into space or going to the moon or going to Mars can save humanity. David, if you have 2 minutes, please read from Phil's email below. So I do have Phil's email. It's actually pretty short. I don't know if I could read it in 2 minutes or not. But Barry, let me tell you what Phil has said. So first of all, he's Australian. He was a retired astronaut. He did not go into space. He was one of those classes that never got to fly, unfortunately, but he actually was an NASA astronaut. He's a scientist, a legitimate guy, a super, super nice guy. He left California. He used to live down around Mountain View, and I believe he moved to Arizona, but I'm not 100% sure about that. But this is in response to something totally different. I think it shows maybe it's too much being put on the shoulders of aerospace to be one of the forces to lead us out of the darkness. So here's what Phil says. If we have learned anything from the half century of failure in the human spaceflight program since Apollo, it should be that proposing giant leaps for mankind, GLMS, is not just futile, but counterproductive. What it leads to is what we have seen. The president demonstrates what a wonderful future-oriented person he is by proposing some glorious GLFM with the essential characteristic that the cost will not become significant until the next administration. The next president cancels the GLFM and proposes a new one, allowing the cost again to be deferred. And so ad sorry infinitum with no real progress. The truth is that there are at present only two viable reasons for human spaceflight. A, it responds to some immense national political exigency, such as perceived Soviet lead in space that caused Kennedy to establish Apollo, or B, the prospects of profits. Science, exploration, or settlement are insufficient by themselves, although they may piggyback on missions motivated by A or B above, and they may become viable motivations if the cost comes down enough. Perhaps some trillionaire will find a lunar or even Martian mission, but even then, will fund a Martian or lunar mission, but even then it would be a one-shot stunt. The USA might undertake lunar settlement if it becomes politically necessary to upstage a Chinese effort, but the cost and time required and the lack of military advantage make Mars a very unlikely focus of any such competition. A faint but not totally inconceivable possibility, see my recent paper in the NSS-based settlement journal, is that the collapsing geomagnetic field means that the transition has begun into the next glacial stage of the current ice age, which would provide strong motivation for developing a haven for off-Earth as soon as possible. Absent one of these extreme long shots, I think we should forget lunar or Martian fantasies and concentrate on viable business plans for extraterrestrial enterprises. And Phil is a big promoter of space solar power, so he says the SPS, possibly tourism, astro mining, lunar helium 3, etc. So are you and are others putting too much responsibility on the shoulders of the space world? Can the space world deliver what you're talking about? Given a glimpse of history that Philip has sort of summarized for us, I wonder if we don't need something that is a much more powerful and broader driver than the space system.
I have a more powerful and broader driver.
Yeah, what is that?
I agree with what Phil says, that the motivations for going to the moon and Mars have not been convincing. But there is there is a general metric, and I call this know-how creation. We shouldn't, the goal of technology is to create know-how, to, at least from the practical standpoint, in terms of the theme of this show, of making the economy stronger. If we can create enough know-how by going to the to Mars or the moon to justify the cost of doing so, then it's worth it. And by know-how, what do I mean by know-how? By dropping the cost of going to let's just say the moon, because that's nearer. The cost of going to the moon in terms of Apollo dollars, translated into present dollars, was $140 billion. People argue about this number. Some say it was $170, some say it was $120, but let's just take a round figure of $150 billion. If we had to go back to the moon today, it would cost a similar amount. We can't afford to do that. But if we could go to the moon, establish a presence on the moon for $15 billion, the amount of industrial know-how that we would gain from producing space hardware at such a low cost would ripple through the economy and have tremendous positive effects. That means that we have to reduce the cost of getting to space by a factor of 10. That's the goal, industrial know-how. Going to the moon is not the goal. Going to Mars is not the goal. Going through a bet to a much more powerful industrial place is a goal. And the fourth industrial, and I'll explain in detail why the fourth industrial revolution is capable of doing that. In short, the fourth industrial revolution aims to do for atoms what the computer revolution did for bits, reduce the cost to zero. And by using artificial intelligence and robotics, we can reduce the cost of space access by a factor of 10. And fulfill Phil's dream. And I agree with Phil. I think the exploration of space for economic development is more important than going to the moon and Mars, although I would like to go to the moon and Mars just because I'm interested in it. But I think Phil's comments are correct, that the goal of space development should be industrial development, and the fourth industrial development can deliver the goods by reducing the cost of access to space by a factor of 10, and it can do that by removing the cost of labor, because as Elon Musk has said, the cost of producing a Falcon 9 is less than 1% materials. The rest is the cost of capital, the cost of real estate, and the cost of labor. So the fourth industrial revolution, with its long-term goal of zero marginal cost manufacturing, that means making the second copy of the device cost nothing. For instance, let's say you're an artist and you manufacture a song, you come out with a hit song. It used to be that back in the old days of vinyl or CDs, that it cost money to produce an additional CD. Now the marginal cost of reproducing a song is zero because it doesn't cost any more to make a million copies of an MP3 file than it does to make one copy. The goal is that is what is incredibly revolutionary about the fourth industrial revolution, is it proposes to make the cost of manufacturing goods the cost of the metal. And it eliminates labor. And of course, that brings us to the topic of the show. If the fourth industrial revolution eliminates labor, what are people going to do?
I got an email question for you. Let me interject it, okay? Because you like to talk a lot. And then the question will be out of sequence.
I will talk less.
This is Adrian in San Diego. To assert that we can, by the way, I do think that what you said and what Phil is alluding to is that if you want to go to Moon and Mars and you make going to Moon or Mars your focus, we ain't getting there. But if your focus isn't really the Moon or Mars, but that happens to be a method for accomplishing your ultimate goal, which is to change manufacturing, lower prices, create industrial technology or something, you might have a fighting chance, except that spin-offs have never worked, so you can't phrase this and create this as the new technologies that you're talking about or the know-how are spin-offs of going to the moon, because then you're right back to where you started from.
Well, so, that's not true. First of all, that's not true. There have been enormous spin-offs. But
they haven't driven the program.
And that's true.
That's what I'm talking about. Okay.
Okay, you're
now,
right.
Now, to Adrian's question, to assert that we can go to Mars for 20 billion buckaroos by any current aerospace corporation when these hold on, same corporations have drained over $391.1 billion into simply building a fairly straightforward, although advanced F-35 fighter jet. Do you really think that overcoming the technical and economic solutions for a Mars trip by the same corporations could be done for your cost goals at any time in the realistic future, I think is ridiculous. Even Elon Musk might not have a long enough lifespan to accomplish such a goal.
I agree with Adrian's skepticism. He's right to be a skeptic about it. But my point is not that corporations are going to do this. My point is that the exponential growth of manufacturing technology is going to make it possible, or could make it possible, if that was our direction. And it has. Adrian is right. Adrian is right. The goal of corporations is not to reduce costs. The goal of corporations is to increase profits. But the fourth industrial revolution is reducing the cost of manufacturing, is beginning to do that. Robotics and the combination of robotics and artificial intelligence could get us to Mars for $20 billion if that became the policy of the space community and if that became the policy of the country. But Adrian is right. Corporations and governments left to their own devices will not achieve this. But Adrian, in response to Adrian's remarks, that's not my point. What's happening with the fourth industrial revolution technologies, this is a Darwinian environment where the technologies are competing with each other and growing exponentially year over year. Corporations are not doing this. The technological environment is doing it, and we are seeing exponential evolution such that the cost of manufacturing space technology could be brought down if industrial technology and industrial policy were reoriented.
So what would the company, what would the corporations do? They would fight that rather than endorse
AI. They would fight it, but they haven't, the music industry didn't fight MP3s, it adjusted. And corporations will not successfully fight the fourth industrial revolution and zero marginal cost manufacturing. They will try to fight it, but they won't succeed.
So, you know, this is totally unrelated, but it's a pet peeve of mine, and it really is related to what Adrian said about the corporations. This fact that the corporations pursue enhanced growth in stock value and profits, meaning they aren't going to do what you say and what Adrian said, is the underlying problem with private sector health insurance companies, because they have the fiduciary obligation to enhance their revenues, and as such, they are in a perpetual state of conflict of interest with policyholders whose costs for medical care may have absolutely nothing to do with their legal obligations to enhance the value of their stock. And to enhance the value of their stock and to be in accordance with their legal requirements for fiduciary obligations, the policyholders are always going to get screwed. And this is the same problem, except you don't really have technology driving costs down like you think is happening in fourth industrial manufacturing. Instead, medical technology is driving costs higher. So now you have a subsector of the economy where just the opposite appears to be going on, Barry. I know this is not really related to our spatial topic
today. No, it's directly related. Yes, it's directly.
Okay.
It's an excellent point.
Then help me out with it, because it seems to me it's 180 degrees opposite, because medical costs are rising like a son of a bitch.
Okay, this is a very important point, and it's actually central to the show. The economy is currently divided into two sectors. Sectors where technology is advancing and reducing the cost exponentially, and sectors where it's not. Computers, genomics, drones, robotics, the 3D printing, lasers, the cost is going down exponentially. And the areas where the cost is not going down exponentially is what you just mentioned.
Medical,
space, and education. Those areas, the one which you just mentioned, medical, the one which I mentioned, education, and was the third one, but medical and education are the, oh, and space.
And space is
they're non-exponential. Those technologies are those areas are going to be radically disrupted because the fourth industrial revolution is going to bring dramatic cost reductions into those areas. They'll be kicking and screaming and they'll be fighting, but it will happen.
Into medical, you think that it's going to force lowering?
I think it'll happen soon. I think it'll happen in the next 5 years. There's already, you're aware of Watson and IBM's artificial intelligence engine that won Jeopardy. It's now being applied to medical diagnosis, and I think that Watson will wipe out medical diagnosis in the next 5 years. It'll be free. Or it's potentially free. It's impossible to predict how well the medical industry will be able to defend themselves.
What's it going to do with medical insurance companies that want to pursue the bottom line and they have these internal conflicts with the people that are their very customers? Just like Lockheed does in building an F-35, the U.S. government is a customer. It just so happens it has deep and endless pockets and bureaucratic crap, which patients don't seem to have. So Lockheed gets away with cost overruns and this and that, and now we're hearing the Marine Corps F-35s are grounded for a software problem and on and on and on and on. So, you know, the customers are a little bit different here. But how do you see Watson, for example, changing the balance for policyholders or patients?
I think that's a tough question, and it raises an interesting issue, because the issue that you raised is the other side of exponential technology, complexity. The government defense procurement and the interaction between governments and companies that produce military and aerospace goods is so complex and so outside the reach of ordinary political processes that it doesn't work anymore. So there'll have to be, I don't want to use the word political revolution in the sense of guns in the street, but there'll have to be an awareness revolution such that people say, we don't want to pay this kind of money because we know that the technology exists to do it for less. There'll have to be political demand for change. It won't change by itself.
And are patients going to have the same revolution on the medical side?
I think that'll happen because it's not military. It's not dark. I think that Watson will wipe out medical diagnosis. I think that'll happen soon.
But it won't cure.
I think that'll happen in the next 10 years.
But it's not going to cure the illnesses. Is that what you're saying? It's going to cure?
No, it's not going to cure the illnesses, but it'll reduce the cost of diagnosis. Usually, the cost of diagnosis will become free.
Interesting.
The medical advances in terms of curing complex diseases like cancer and heart disease, that's a much longer-term problem. And not as amenable, but diagnosis, I mean, it's very clear to me, already there has been a test which shows that artificial intelligence analysis of breast cancer x-rays is 90% accurate, whereas doctors are only 79% accurate. So artificial intelligent analysis of cancer diagnosis x-rays is already better than standard medical practice, and it should become free. So progress in the medical, to make a long story short, government procurements, education, aerospace, medicine, these are all non-exponential areas, and they're the targets for disruption of exponential technology.
Okay, so let me ask you another thing. Most of the people, let me rephrase that, probably everyone listening to this show has very much a higher level of proficiency with technology, engineering, and science than the general public. I think some people are unbelievably well-educated and well-trained, and people that are just average, like me, where I only, had high school chemistry, I didn't even have physics, know more about physics than, 90% of the general public, for example. So we're able to kind of, if Watson became free and on the internet, we're probably able to use it. But most of the people I meet in the hospitals when my son goes in for CF or I'm there for this or that, they don't have a clue. I mean, they can work their smartphone, Barry, but that doesn't mean that they could go do a medical diagnosis with a free Watson or who knows what else. You know, the technology while there isn't really available to the people because they don't have the ability to use it. And I think that's most of our society.
I think you raised the key point. I think, and I you saw my document.
Right.
I had areas of the point you raised is a key point and is a key challenge. How can we make this advanced technology available to the average person? That's the main question. And the answer is that we can. We can make the technology available by an educational effort, and I think that we on the space show could move in that direction. We could have shows dedicated to showing people how to use this technology in their own lives. And it's just a matter of education. And the point being that this technology is, the use of this technology is available to everyone with a high school education. In the document that I posted on the show notes, none of the technology that's listed there is beyond the capability of high school students. So the task is not insurmountable. We need an educational effort, and I think a modest educational effort to show people how to use this technology in their own lives would have tremendous economic benefit.
We don't reach the average person, so you'd have to have a much bigger distribution method.
Well, but here's the thing about communication, that communication is exponential. I agree that your assessment that the audience of the space show has greater technological acumen than the average individual. But everybody who listens to the space show has a family, so that information made available to them could be made available to their family members through listeners to the space show, and that people, the space show family members, have further family members. So communication and the spreading of information by communication networks is a key feature of the fourth industrial revolution, because education, of all the points that I wanted to make, I think this is a fundamental point. Education can be reconfigured to become exponential so that it spreads exponentially throughout the society via social networks and other communications means. And I think we could experiment with these technologies in the future. And I think that's the key takeaway. The goal of my talk is to convince people that this technology is accessible, that it has economic benefits, and that it can be spread throughout the country at very low cost in an exponential way, that our social and economic and political environment could be improved greatly with a small amount of effort.
Let's pause. We're halfway through, and I want to come back, and when we come back, I want to hear how you spread it, okay?
Okay,
so everybody sit tight. We've only taken a few of your questions. We will take more. For those of you that are not listening at work and want to give us a call and have access to your phone lines, it is 1-866-687-7223. We do answer the phone during the break as well. Back in a couple of minutes, everybody.
The mission of the Space Show is to promote future economic opportunities, scientific discoveries, and medical advances for all humankind through peaceful and cooperative ventures in outer space. The Space Show intends to be the forum by which space exploration becomes an integral part of our culture, our economy, our country, our world, and our global vision, in which all nations unite in creating a thriving future through the enormous potentials afforded by off-Earth opportunities. The Space Show is committed to advancing integrity and responsibility, both in our off-Earth conduct and in the potential long-range consequences of our actions in space. The Space Show wants to make the dreams of space today the realities of tomorrow.
Welcome back, everybody. Part two of our Space Show program. We're talking with Barry Levin today. We do have some corporate sponsors I want to thank for the program, and the Integrated Space Plan is one of our sponsors. Remember, folks, these are the guys with the 100-year forecast of our future in space. The Integrated Space Plan includes Earth to orbit and reusable in-space transportation. It also depicts development of the Moon and Mars, followed by a base in the asteroid belt and space settlements. And it's all available to be seen and explored and played with at thespaceplan.com. When you view that online, that's why I say play with, you can click on any of its 500 elements for more expansive information. You can buy the full-size poster. It's pretty cool. I have one. They have a new revised plan that they just announced at ISDC. You got to get it, thespaceplan.com. And then remember that the Space Foundation is our sponsor. Their 34th symposium is ready to go, April 16th to the 19th of 2018. Again, it will be at the Broadmoor in Colorado Springs, Colorado. And networking superb, different people than attend an advocacy conference, different topic. Really something you need to take advantage of at least once in your life, and then you'll probably become addicted to it. Their website, spacesymposium.org. Check it out, and we thank these guys for their sponsorship of space programs. So Barry is with us, and to start off the second segment, he's got another email that I'll read real quick from Adrian. He says, a Watson supercomputer costs $3 million in hardware, not counting maintenance and programming. This is equivalent to the cost of a CT scanning machine. I had a CT scan not long ago. I paid over $300 in insurance costs. Well, that's pretty good for your insurance. They probably paid about $1,500, Adrian. Free diagnosis and really is really another fantasy. As for the fourth revolution, making things so much cheaper, it reminds me of the 50s promise for free electricity from the great future of atomic energy. Dream on.
I think Adrian's skepticism is well expressed. There's been a technology has made promises over the years that haven't come to pass. So Adrian has really raised a fantastic point. You know, why should people trust in this? Because the cost is coming down. It's not coming down everywhere. For instance, I'm a 3D printing enthusiast. 2 years ago, I built a 3D printer for $320. As I pointed out in my document, and the ANET A8, which is a much better 3D printer than the one I have, is now available. The kit is now available for $139. So the cost is coming down by a factor of two, slightly more, a factor of, let's say, 2.2 every 2 years. So the cost of robotics, the cost of 3D printing, the cost of laser engraving, those technologies are dropping exponentially. The cost of medicine and the cost of energy. I mean, Adrian raised the point, which is a good point, that in the 1950s, atomic energy promised to make the cost of electricity too cheap to meter. So Adrian's skepticism is justified. However, it's unnecessarily pessimistic, because if you look at the cost curve, solar technology, which everyone laughs at, the cost curve of solar technology is exponential. The cost of solar technology is dropping 10% a year. Dubai just, I can't remember if it was Abu Dhabi or Dubai, I think it was Dubai, just launched an 800 megawatt solar electric project, and the cost is 2.4 cents per kilowatt hour, less than half of gas in Abu Dhabi or Dubai, which is, you know, the at the center of the petroleum industry. The cost of energy is not going to be a problem in the future. The cost of solar is dropping exponentially. Solar is exponential. Nuclear is not exponential. But there are nuclear projects such as Kirk Sorensen's nuclear project and Dennis White's nuclear project, and they are working to use fourth industrial tools to make nuclear energy exponential. And how is that going to work? The problem with nuclear energy, other than public fear of it, is that the construction costs are enormous. they have to be built as one-off projects on site. If you modularize nuclear design so that they can be manufactured in factories by robots, the cost can come down exponentially. I understand and take in good stride Adrian's criticisms, but I think it's easy to be a hardened skeptic and not keep your eyes open and see that the ground is shifting under us. There is a revolutionary change, a historical change underway, wherein the fourth industrial technology is eventually going to do for atoms what it did for bits. It will not happen overnight, but in the course of 20 or 40 years, nuclear energy, space, and medicine, which are not now on exponential curves, will be on exponential curves. It won't be easy. It won't happen overnight. There'll be ups and downs, but the direction is clear.
I have an aside for you because Adrian's in San Diego. I'm over across the bay, north of San Francisco in Marin County, and you're in the East Bay, but we're all three in the Golden State. What do you think the cost of our power would be, electricity would be in California if you removed all the political policy crap that they have loaded onto our utility bills?
I don't know. I don't know the economics of it, but I'm a big advocate of nuclear, and I don't think the nuclear plant should be closed. I think that nuclear is a big part of the future solution. So I'm an advocate of nuclear, but I can't answer your question. I don't know what percentage of the cost is due to political regulation. I don't know.
It's a huge percentage. I used to know it. Maybe Adrian knows it in San Diego, but it is huge. I, too, am a big proponent of nuclear, and but the plants are aging, and then, of course, they site them on earthquake faults, and then the ratepayers have to bail out the utility company when they close.
Just to briefly interject, the way that fourth industrial technology is going to lower the cost of nuclear is by modularizing them, and since the fourth generation technologies that work on molten salt technologies operate at atmospheric pressure, you don't need a containment vessel, the nuclear plants can be made in factories at, a tiny fraction of the cost that they're made now, so the cost of nuclear can be dropped, I would say, by an order of magnitude.
Okay, well, that's unfortunately for another show, but I'm a big proponent of nuclear, and I would like to see it used more often.
It's part of the discussion. The issue of nuclear, the issue of energy, it's part of the discussion of the fourth industrial revolution. Because I'm repeating myself to the point of excess, but the goal of the fourth industrial revolution is to make manufacturing follow the same exponential curve as Moore's law.
You want to demonstrate a lot about what you're talking about, and we've talked about doing this, using this space show as a demonstration medium or tool. Talk a little bit about what you want to show people and get them involved with.
Okay. I would like to do some experiments in the future, if there's any interest, in actually doing educational shows on various technology topics, 3D printing, remote sensing, Internet of Things. And I want to mention the Internet of Things as a gateway drug, for lack of a better term, to the fourth industrial revolution. The Internet of Things is simply the idea that every electronic device and tiny ubiquitous sensors that cost pennies will have Internet connections, and so these Internet-connected devices, known as the Internet Things, will have billions and billions, if not trillions, of devices connected to the Internet, producing another component of the fourth industrial revolution, which is big data. In other words, in your house and in my house, we'll have sensors that monitor humidity, monitor CO2 levels in the house, monitor volatile chemicals in the house, and so every house in the world will have these, and there'll be a gigantic database which monitors the environmental health of people's homes, and there'll be sensors in your toilet bowl to measure if there's excess sugar in your urine, so that there'll be gigantic health databases, gigantic environmental databases, and they'll also these small sensors will be enabled by cryptocurrency, so that if they need to order components to fix the house, they'll order components to fix the house, and we could do segment. The value of these technologies is that consumer, for instance, 3D printing or internet sensors, these things cost, you know, in the worst case, a 3D printer could cost $150, but a whole kit to do experiments in Internet of Things costs $40, and it comes with a computer, a tiny little computer the size of a deck of cards, and a whole bunch of sensors so that you can hook your house up to the Internet and see the conditions in your house. So we could do a show devoted to the Internet of Things and the technologies necessary to learn the Internet of Things and how it's relevant to people's economic health and how they can use these technologies to generate businesses for themselves, or so that we could do that. And we could do a show that experiments, on interactive technologies. How can we connect all the listeners? How can the listeners log into my computer so that I can show them how to use these technologies using a video camera and using the software tools that I use to program these devices? Is it feasible for us to actually start an educational project so that we could actually disseminate and experiment with means to educate ordinary people in the use of these technologies? And I don't mean to imply that listeners to the show are ordinary people. But the other element of this is cryptocurrency, and I wanted to mention this, how cryptocurrency can be a fundamental part of the new technology revolution. Cryptocurrency, which most people know as Bitcoin or Ethereum, is a decentralized, trust-enabling form of banking. It's essentially a public database and ledger which allows the free transfer of money, the free establishment of ownership of goods, the free establishment of programmable contracts, so that the financial infrastructure necessary to form businesses, carry out contracts, transfer money, so that backbone of a new economy is essentially free. And since it's programmable, it's limitless in what it could do. We could experiment on the space show by doing the following. We could have a show devoted to establishing Bitcoin accounts for listeners who are interested, and then we could use these Bitcoin accounts to transfer money to callers who make good points. And I don't mean significant sums of money, because the advantage of Bitcoin is that the money is infinitely fungible. A Satoshi is a hundred millionth of a Bitcoin. So let's say Adrian called in and he had a valid criticism pointing out that exaggerated claims for technology have been made before. People could vote Bitcoins or fractional Bitcoins to Adrian, and we could gain experience in learning how to use Bitcoin to enable new forms of human communication and human education, and all this at no cost, zero cost. So, I mean, these are some of the ideas I have. A show to allow people to communicate by video and to communicate by logging into my machine. A show to establish Bitcoin accounts. And let's say for the first 10 Bitcoin subscribers that we put in the show, I'll give everybody a dollar's worth of Bitcoin so they don't have to go through the hassle of exchanging money into their Bitcoin account. So we could do a show on that. We could do a show on the Internet of Things. And we could just do a show on interactive communications. How can listeners foster their interest in aerospace, learn the technologies that can be used to emulate aerospace? We could initiate programs in building rovers, building hydroponics units. There's a lot we could do. There's a lot of experimentation we could do. There's a lot of learning we could do. We could serve as a sort of test bed for the new technologies and experiment with ways to help people learn the technologies and learn how to use these technologies to accelerate their own economic development, their own entrepreneurial projects, and also how to use Bitcoin in their own lives. One of the things I advocate is that parents pay their children for achieving grades in schools, pay them, but this is symbolic. I don't mean pay large sums of money. I mean pay in fractional bitcoins. If a kid does well in school, they could give him a few pennies worth of Bitcoin, and it's not You're not bribing your children. You're giving them symbolic support, and you're showing them, you're also teaching them Bitcoin, which is a way they're going to make their living in the future. So those are just, those are some of the ideas I have. And I'd be interested if any listeners have, let's say some listener is interested in food or textiles or healthcare, we could have a listener call in and say, how can I use technology to push forward my interests? So there's really a lot of different ideas we could pursue.
You have another skeptical email from Adrian, who says, he's running a few minutes behind our live broadcast, I am inherently not anti-nuclear, but if a reactor is built and managed by another obscene profits-driven power company, such as the San Onofre plant that contracted with Mitsubishi to install a knowingly defective system that leaked radioactivity in less than 2 years and forced the closure of the plant, then I, for one, don't want a Fukushima type of incident 40 miles from my home.
I take Adrian's criticism, and you know, Adrian's skepticism is healthy because I'm very optimistic. So it's good to have a counterbalance to my optimism. But I'll give an example of what a future nuclear plant could look like. A future nuclear plant could be monitored not only by the companies running it, but could be monitored. For instance, let's say Adrian's a skeptic, and Adrian says, "Okay, you can build a nuclear plant in my area, but a group of individuals that I will organize will monitor the plant in addition to your monitors. So you can have crowdsourced monitoring of nuclear energy, and let's say 1% or 5% of the operational costs are given to skeptics of the plant safety, and Adrian could be paid to be the professional ombudsman or the professional skeptic of any new nuclear plant built in his backyard, so that skeptics are employed to boost the reliability of nuclear. And I think that these kinds of ideas will actually be the employment of the future. People like Adrian, who have well-founded objections to the technology, can be employed to make the technology safer and more reliable, because people like Adrian care about their own safety, and you could be sure that if Adrian were on the case, the plant would be safer. And I advocate hiring critics of any technology to be part of the project, and some portion of the construction costs should be given to hiring members of the public to participate either as critics of the plan or as contributors of the plan. That's the shape of the new economy. There will not be a sharp divide between companies that make the nuclear plants and consumers that consume the energy from the plants. There will be a blending of consumer and producer, such that there will be a new types of economic relationships. So I think that Adrian should keep his eyes and ears peeled, because there's an economic opportunity for him in this. His skepticism is valuable. Skeptics can't be dismissed.
Do you see these types of processes and changes coming to pass in the near term, or is this going to be a struggle?
No, take the area of open source technology, internet technologies, programming languages. These are all open source communities, and the bugs are resolved by members of the community. If there's a bug in the internet protocol, the people who support the groups that support the internet protocol fix the bugs. I'm an enthusiast of programming languages, the Ruby programming language, the Python programming language, even HTML, HTML5. These programming languages are both created by the users and supported by the users. Linux, the operating system that runs most of the servers on the internet, is supported by a user group working for the Linux Foundation, and so Linux was produced by voluntary work. It's now become a paid service, but the users support it. So why not open source nuclear energy? Why not use that model to build the new institutions where AJ country and becomes a member of the nuclear community, and he expresses his skepticism of the safety of it, and is brought on board to make sure that people are not falling asleep at the switch. These kinds of technologies are in operation now, widespread.
You have another email from Catherine in Seattle, and she says, Barry, I think this is really interesting, but I also, not being a totally technology-driven person, find it's a little scattered. Can you take a couple of minutes and tie all of this together for, say, the space industry or something related to space? Can you make it have sense rather than a string here, a string there, a subject there, something like that? I'd like for someone to help me put it all together.
Okay, that's a good question. I'll tie it together with the space industry. The space industry is not exponential. The costs don't go down the way the cost of computing goes down. I am currently building a model of the Large Synoptic Survey Telescope. People like me that have engineering skills could build our own satellites. We can't afford to launch them. If the fourth industrial technologies are applied to space such that the cost of And I mean 3D printing, robotics, artificial intelligence. If those technologies are applied to the space industry, the cost of launching satellites can be brought down by a factor of 10, and people like myself can launch our own satellites. So, in short, the tools of the fourth industrial technology can give individuals the power to do things, to give me access to space. I could launch my own space sensing satellite. If a concerted effort were made to reduce the cost of manufacturing space hardware, ordinary people could gain access to space technology. That is a brief answer to your question. I'll tie together regarding 3D printing, which I have some experience. If you're a person that knows, like Catherine, that knows nothing about 3D printing technology, you can buy a kit for $140, and we could start a space show program to educate people in building kits and using 3D technology. The technology, fourth industrial revolution technology, can revolutionize space, not by creating some miraculous new technology, because the miraculous technology of the fourth industrial revolution is manufacturing efficiency. Space suffers from poor manufacturing efficiency. Space hardware is like 1,000 or 10,000 times more expensive than ordinary hardware. Fourth industrial revolutionary technologies can make space manufacturing hardware for space the same as it is for manufacturing Toyotas or Fords. That's, in a nutshell, what new industrial technologies can do. It can make space an ordinary manufacturing technology instead of what it is now. Space is now heroic engineering. The fourth industrial revolution can make space regular engineering. That's the revolutionary development in space. Not nuclear space propulsion, not solar electric propulsion, not EM technology, not cryogenic upper stages. Laborless manufacturing, that's the revolution. Artificial intelligence-inspired manufacturing, that's the revolution. It's already underway. It's in wide-scale use. All we have to do is apply it to space, and the cost can come way down.
Arnold is in Denver, and he says, David, I'm at work, so I'm not using the phone. But it seems to me that the more successful ideas such as those that Barry is talking about become, and the more people in the economic community that start to latch onto this, the more resistance there would be from government through increased regulation, because I don't believe that government wants to see this type of individual empowerment. Barry, have you thought about facing an uphill battle against a regulatory world?
Yes, I have, and I think it's an excellent question. The uphill battle is not government. The uphill battle is against individuals wanting to become empowered. This is the battle we face. The technologies that I'm talking about, 3D printing, artificial intelligence, cryptocurrency, laser manufacturing, all these technologies can be afforded by any middle-class person in the United States. And any poor person that wants to gain access to this technology can find the makerspace in their area. The problem is not government regulation. The problem is inertia, that people are afraid of the technology. They're afraid that it's too advanced for them. And so that kind of fear creates inertia. That's the problem.
So you don't think the challenge is going to be against an oppressive government regulatory regime, but against people being motivated to follow through?
Yes, I think that individual motivation is it. I could be wrong. I mean, but the government hasn't been hostile to Moore's Law and semiconductor. It hasn't been hostile to 3D printing. It hasn't been hostile to CRISPR or any of the genomic technologies. The government has not proven itself to be an impediment. What is an impediment is people's willingness to put in the effort to educate themselves, and that's an impediment. And I hope that we can experiment with finding ways to overcome this in the space show. I'm really looking forward to finding ways to help people get involved in this technology and make it accessible, because this technology, this radical artificial intelligence, robotics, the thing that's amazing, this is a point that I haven't made adequately, the concept of scaling. Does it work on the small level? Does it work on the large level? The beauty of these new technologies is that they scale. 3D printing used by SpaceX is very exotic technology. Those machines cost millions of dollars. But the machine that I made, which cost me $300 to build, now costs $140. Anybody can access this. And here's the beauty of this. The machine that SpaceX is using to put the Draco thrusters costs $1.5 million. The machine that Kathleen can buy can cost $140, but the programming used to create the objects is exactly the same. So let's say Catherine buys a $140 machine. She works at it assiduously for 2 or 3 years. She can then go to work for SpaceX and use their $1.5 million machine. So the concept of scaling of this technology is central. These advanced robotics technologies scale fantastically. They scale from the level of SpaceX down to the level of David Livingston, down to the level of Catherine, down to the level of Adrian, down to the level of Barry. This is a central, this is why these technologies are so powerful and such a reason for optimism. Ordinary people can learn to use these technologies to enhance the skills they already have. That's actually a central point that I wanted to make.
We haven't talked about it on this show, but we did on other shows, and that is the enormous displacement problem of labor as more and more companies, adopt what you're talking about and don't need as many employees. And I heard a report today on the statistics of the baby boomers who have their own businesses. It's a $1 trillion industry of baby boomer businesses. Most of them, 60%, have no management or sales succession planned. And if they sell the businesses, they usually sell to competitors who take the business out of competition, so jobs are lost. So that's another component of possible job loss in our economy. So that's job displacement through aging, I guess. We stand to lose a lot of jobs through technology, what you're talking about, driverless technology, AI, plus people that are aging that have businesses and hire people that may end up shutting those businesses down. And this is just in the United States, but this is going on in lots of places. So what do? We're not going to train everyone as you once sort of thought about being a 3D printer. But
no, this is the key point. I'm so glad you brought this up, because this is what the show was originally intended, jobs. Well, jobs as such, I'm going to exaggerate here to make a point. Jobs as such are going away. the concept of a job is a relatively recent phenomenon. Actually, before the Industrial Revolution, most people worked on the land and there were no jobs. In a sense, we're going to go back to that. People are going to work in their houses. They're going to work using 3D printing. And I take your criticism. Not everybody is going to work in 3D printing. But every block will have a 3D printer, and people will come up with ideas. And they say, all right, I need this for my house. And they will go over to the person that has the 3D printer. They will produce that. And then the person that came up with the idea can do sales. Work is going to be reconfigured so that it's not a job. Work, people who are consumers, people who are, there will be a blending between consumers and companies, and consumers will work for the companies they buy stuff from. Cryptocurrency will be used to create micro work. If David, if you need something made for your house, you dial me up, I print it out, I mail it out to you, you pay me via cryptocurrencies. People pay their children for school. People pay people in their neighborhood with expertise to teach their children skills. It's going to be sort of a different kind of economy. It's impossible to predict the shape of this, but we're not going back to the jobs economy. We're going forward to a cryptocurrency-enabled work economy. There's plenty of work to be done, and a lot of it is non-technical. We have to reestablish political institutions that work. We have to create new educational institutions. We have to create new health institutions. There's an enormous amount of work to be done. We have to figure out how to monetize that work and distribute it evenly among the population. That's a huge task, but it's not a negative. There's an enormous amount of work to be done. Jobs are going away, or at least traditional jobs are going away. Enormous amounts of work is going to be created. We need to build new social institutions, new educational institutions, new medical institutions. There's an enormous amount of work to do. We have to figure out how to monetize that work and distribute that work so everybody can participate. I know that's not a solution. It's just a series of loose ideas, but that's the best I can do at this time.
Adrian continues to be on a roll with you, Barry. So you must have motivated him. As a not total critic of technology, I encourage you to also advocate the greater applications of genetic editing utilizing CRISPR research in order to advance genetic disease and cancer-free humans, as well as a biologically enhanced intelligent human race. The government should also stop being an impediment with restriction on human genetic engineering.
I'm with Adrian all the way. I put CRISPR in my document. I put a link to, there's Joshua Zahner in San Francisco who's selling CRISPR kits, so we could do a show on CRISPR experimentation. But Adrian made a great point. CRISPR, it's really important to include genomics. I mean, Adrian really made a good contribution with that. CRISPR is a technology for genetic engineering, which is extremely powerful, and also, It's easily available. Joshua Zahner's Odin Project in San Francisco is selling a CRISPR technology kit for $149 where you can experiment with gene editing. So these are all.
Whoa. You mean, again, I'm going to personalize this because gene editing is a big thing to me. So I buy this kit and I want to experiment with, say, CF gene editing. How do I get CF genes to edit? How do I get the source material?
This kit uses yeasts. It doesn't use human genomes, but you could possibly experiment with your own genetic material if you were.
How?
So you would have to learn. I'm not an expert in CRISPR technology, but you could buy. We could discuss that.
So you mean I could buy genetic editing hardware and software that I could learn to operate, and since I'm a CF gene carrier of the most common CF gene, I could, if I knew how to isolate that gene.
Is? I don't know what that is.
Say it again, what?
I don't know what the CF gene is. Could you explain that?
Well, there's hundreds of variations, but it's a mutated gene, and so I carry one version of it, and it's you can detect it in a simple blood test. So I don't know how, if I wanted to experiment with editing that gene, if I could, I don't even know the language for it.
It's possible you could use Zahner's kit to do that.
I mean,
I don't know if you can, but it's possible.
So what's the name of this kit?
It's called the Odin Project. I have it in the document I sent to you. It's in there.
Odin, O-D-E-N Project?
Yes. Google CRISPR Odin Project, and it will show up.
How hard is it to learn?
I don't know. We could experiment. We could buy a kit and do a show on it.
I'd really be cool if you could, if I could take one of my gene. I don't know how I could take my gene. I mean, I don't. People who are listening that have this knowledge must think I'm a real jerk and idiot, but I don't even know the language to use. Adrian, where are you when I need you? I don't even know the language to use to explain that I want to use my own material to play around with screwing around with the gene.
I just know that Zahner is selling this kit. The first thing to do would be to just look at the kit. And I mean, I'm not knowledgeable in this area. I'm not a genomics experiment.
So, but I guess the point is something like this is evolving to, you know, when I was growing up, and I'm a lot older than you, I could build TVs and radios and things with Marantz and a couple of other, you know, Heathkit was one that they, you'd buy a kit and you could build your own radio or whatever you wanted to do. So I guess this new technology that you're talking about is evolving into kits where a user can learn how to build it and use it and do cool things with it themselves, maybe down the road even commercial things.
Yes, I mean, that's a great way to sort of end the show. The point of this is that
amazing.
Technology is growing by leaps and bounds, and that you can now experiment. CRISPR technology is one of the most incredibly powerful inventions ever in the genomics realm, and that you can learn the ins and outs of it for $150.
Interesting.
We could talk about experimenting with regard to your CF gene.
Well, I wonder how you'd get the CF gene. I mean, I don't
know, but we could investigate that.
I wonder what would happen if I wrote them a customer service email.
Just try. Tell them that you're interested. Tell them that maybe he would do a show. He's a really wild and crazy guy, Zahner.
Do you know him?
I know him personally, but I know his story.
What is his name?
Joshua Zahner.
Z-I-N-G-E-R?
No, Z-A-Y-N-O. I don't know the spelling. Let me quickly look this up.
What page is it on your thing? I printed out your thing.
Okay, let's see where it is.
Is this, so this guy lives in San Francisco who created
it? Yeah, his business, I don't know where he lives, but his business is based in San Francisco. I don't know him personally at all, but I know his story, which is amazing.
Well, maybe I should.
He had a PhD in biochemistry, and he had some kind of a horrible bowel disease, and he experimented on himself, and he cured himself.
Maybe if I get him as a starter to do a show, you'll have to co-host it with me, because I don't even know how to talk to him.
I'm trying to find it. Let's see.
Listeners, this is on the printout that Barry put on the blog, which you can access as well. I have it printed out, and I'm looking through it for what you're talking about, but so far I haven't come across it, but I'm sure it's there. But this is, I'm going to follow this up, Barry.
Oh, there it is. It's on page, I found it. It's on page 5, I think, or 6. It's under the genomics section. Odin Zahner, $159, and there's a link. It's www.theodin.com. THE-ODIN. It's in the document.
Okay. Yeah, I found it. amazing. What's the other company, Synthego?
Oh, there's another one. Synthego, this is a beautiful example of how the technology is metastatic, it metastasized. SpaceX employees formed Synthego, which is a company to teach genetic technology to individuals and organizations. So SpaceX employees started a genetic engineering company. It just goes to show how the technology metastasizes, that once you achieve the computing skills and the manufacturing skills in one area, it can be transferred to other areas rapidly. So these SpaceX employees dropped out of SpaceX, and what kind of company did they form? They formed a bioengineering company. That's the nature of the beast. That's what we're dealing with. These technologies are metastasizing. They're replicating in an exponential way.
Well, listeners, we may have a show on bioengineering. I guess that can be closely related to space somehow. Very cool.
Well, there's a million interesting areas, and the beauty of the main thing that I wanted to make is these technologies are accessible, and I think that what we could do in the long run is I'm really committed to finding a way to make these technologies accessible so people have a fighting chance economically in the future. That's my commitment.
Fascinating, Barry. Really interesting way of looking at things. Think you could sell this if you ran for Congress?
Maybe. You know, I think people are ready to hear, you know, something different.
Of course.
We can experiment. We'll see if people are interested in learning these things. And we can experiment with ways to make the technology accessible. What you don't want to do is overwhelm people. You want to give them some technology that they can sink their teeth in that's easy enough for them to get started. Because the economic, even though jobs are being put in danger, on the other side of the equation, enormous economic opportunity is being created at the same time. So this technology is a double-edged sword. It gives with one hand and it takes away with the other. If we can supply a way for people to gain access to this technology, they'll have a fighting chance to create a prosperous future for themselves and their children via the old-fashioned entrepreneurial route.
Adrian said the technology for CRISPR is not inherently difficult, but access to the basic lab equipment such as electrophoresis, DNA sequencing, DNA and RNA, oligopurchase or commercial synthesis, cell incubators and such is needed, and just some general molecular biological background is needed.
Adrian would be, you know, a great guy to have on the show.
He doesn't want to do it. I've asked him many times.
He's right. I mean, you need infrastructure. But just it'd be interesting if Adrian wanted to contribute a document in how could people, you know, what is the what's needed for an elementary start, not to do something in advance, not talking about setting up a complete lab, but how could people gain a basic understanding of the technologies involved in a low-cost way, and in a way that's simple enough for people with a high school education to access. Maybe Adrian could contribute his knowledge in that regard, because it sounds like he has a great deal of knowledge.
He's a very sharp listener, and on not just this topic, but a lot of topics.
Well, you know, this is part of what I would hope to do in the future, is to bring together people with expertise to help educate people, to help, if we could find a way to transfer some of Adrian's expertise to the general listener audience so that people would at least be more knowledgeable about the subject. So, I mean, it's great. Adrian, you really made a great contribution to the show today. I appreciate his effort greatly.
Here, gene engineering kits. So, they have multiple ones at this company, at Odin's company, that anywhere from $80 to $350.
Yes, and the other thing is you could use 3D printing to make some of the equipment yourself that Adrian was talking about, to make lab equipment so that, you know, one hand feeds the other.
Here, you can get a complete genetic engineering home lab kit for $1,700.
Jeez. There you go. There you go.
I'm going to see if they have received their newsletter. I wonder if you can actually send them an email and if somebody wouldn't think I was a whack job and would respond.
The CEO of the company is a fairly wild character, so I think he'd be receptive.
I got to find a way to reach him, but there isn't anything that really says about us and how you reach us. But I'll have to find out how to reach the guy.
Well, yeah, that's great. I mean, Adrian made a great contribution. We talked about genomics and in relation to your issues and stuff. So, I mean, this is real practical information.
Okay, here. Wow, Joshua Zahner, Jesus. If you saw this guy coming at you at night, you'd probably run for the cops.
Exactly. I mean, I'm a guy with a short crew.
And he gives his email address out. Wow, cool.
He's a wild and crazy guy, but he's a public-spirited citizen. So I think that if you sent him an email, he'd respond.
Well, the start would be to put him on the show.
He would be an incredible guest.
And you would have to co-host this with me because I don't have a clue how to interview the guy, but yeah, everybody with the company, I'm looking at their thing. They're all really young, except for one guy who's their business advisor, George Church, and he's an old geezer. But all the other people are really young people, but I guess they have the training.
Yeah, well, he's a PhD in microbiology, so he graduated from Stanford, I think. So he's not a lightweight.
He got his PhD in molecular at University of Chicago.
Well, it's also a fine university.
Yeah. Very interesting, Barry. I'm going to follow on with all of this, and it's really cool. I'm glad you happened to mention all this on the show. So, listeners, what your role for this show is, since you will hear this on archives, post comments on the blog and let us know if you would like to see some of the type of programming that Barry is talking about adapted as space show programming, and what you would think of that. Would learning how to do something like Barry's talking about interest you? Would you want to see sort of a do-it-yourself training program, assuming we can work it out and show you visually on the space show? Let us know if you have an interest in what your specific interest would be, and we'll go from there. So over the next couple of weeks, we will be looking for your notes on archives and let us know. And if you want to speak with Barry, you can reach him through me, and you all know my address, drspace@thespaceshow.com. And let's see where it takes us, Barry.
Okay, this is great. I mean, we got down to some practical things and some ideas to really... I'm interested in helping people take part in the fourth industrial revolution and helping people create a new economy for themselves. Great things are possible, but we have to make it possible for people to learn how to do this in a way that's not too painful.
Excellent. And I'll let you know what happens when I contact Joshua Zahner.
Oh, great!
Zahner.
This is great. I'm really glad that we got this.
And Adrian, if I get him on the show, I'll give you a heads up as well too, because I'd love to have you listening and give us feedback and ask questions as well.
Yeah, I'd like to thank Adrian for his feedback. It's really important to have people, you know, be skeptical and not just be wildly enthusiastic. You know, it's important to have both sides. There's skepticism and there's a dark side to this as well as a positive side. So it's good to have both sides of the opinion.
Okay, listeners, that is it for today. And remember, I'm headed tomorrow to a new space in San Francisco at the Park Hotel. And there will be no show tomorrow and no Hotel Mars on Wednesday. And we resume our live programming on Friday. All of these programs are on the upcoming show menu and the website newsletter. And those of you who get our email newsletter, you have the information as well. And I thank you very much for your emails and for listening and for your questions. And special thanks to Barry, as always, for a really thought-provoking and mind-expanding program, and special thanks to Adrian for helping us along. Everybody have a great week. Keep looking up. Goodbye from the Space Show.